It's Saturday. Well, it's Saturday when this is being recorded, and that means it is time for a new podcast to the DJ's Aviation Podcast Show. Thank you so much for all the support, like always. To the people that have reviewed since the last one, a big thanks to you. However, once again, I will be complaining about the Apple Podcast review system. The only way I can see if you've reviewed is by going through every single country individually, which is near on impossible to do. Due to just how difficult it is to change countries, then it puts you right back to the start of where you're originally selecting. I don't believe we had any more written reviews, but there are definitely people who reviewed the show just in star form. So to the people that did, thank you very, very much. Today's podcast is my experience on board a Boeing 747. To the longtime listeners of the podcast, we'd have to go back to early 2019 before there was, well, I'd say like a 2-year break. You may actually recall the title of this podcast. This is basically a re-recording of said episode. So this has been done before, but it's a re-recording as I was, I believe, something along the lines of 17 at the time of that recording, and I've played it back. I managed to actually recover the file on an old hard drive that I found here back in Australia. Went through the podcast. I've written down a bunch of notes, but ultimately, it wasn't the most stellar podcast, if you will. On my left-hand side, one of my displays, I have 1,000 words in dot point form, so hopefully I'll be able to replicate this podcast to the best of my abilities, getting down a lot of the key bits of information that will make this what it is. As you can probably imagine, it's going to cover mostly the 747. Before I get underway, I've got a lot of questions I just want to get under. What am I even saying? There's some questions I want to answer, pardon me, that I keep getting in the Discord server, YouTube comments, emails, and so forth. People will say, oh, why isn't this on Spotify? Why aren't you publishing it on Spotify? I can't find it on Google Podcasts. I provide the Apple Podcasts link because that is where the majority of people listen. As an example, we'll have thousands, let's say, that listen on Apple Podcasts, but maybe only 100 on Spotify. So I just provide the main one. That doesn't mean that the podcast is not on other platforms. I would highly encourage you to just search the podcast as in the DJ's Aviation Podcast on your local streaming platform, and you may very well find it. But I just put forward the two links, which is Apple Podcasts and SoundCloud, just because they're the main ones. So you can listen to this on Spotify, and to the people that are listening, a big shout out to you. You can listen to this on, you know, iTunes and whatever it may be. It is on other platforms. Last episode, I kind of had some discussion surrounding my university application. I believe when I last spoke to you, I was getting my referencing organized, and I think I may have started on the personal statement, but I'm not too sure. As of the newest update, I'm pleased to announce that I've submitted my application to study in London for next year, which is very, very exciting. Unfortunately, now comes the long wait, but I'm very, very excited, very nervous at the same time, so now it's just a waiting game to see when offers, or if any offers even come in at all, because I'm not guaranteed a place in any of the 5 courses I chose. For people that are interested in what I chose, it's very much media, communications, journalism, event management, and all that kind of avenue. There's nothing aviation related, just for people that may, you know, want to have a better understanding, because I don't personally want to study aviation. I definitely love doing it now, but it's not something I want to be doing in 25 years. So I'm looking at sort of other avenues, while also building upon what I've learned in the past 6 years type of thing. So that's the latest update. It's been submitted. Unfortunately, I don't think there'll be any more updates until I can give you an answer. And then that will probably be a whole separate podcast if I do get an answer to one of the courses. But let's cross our fingers and toes and hope for a good outcome. You know what I mean? So COVID within Melbourne, we'll get onto that now. I mean, our cases are worsening with every single day. I think yesterday we reported 450. No end in lockdown is in sight. So if people are unaware, since arriving back in Australia last month, the 5th of August, I went from hotel quarantine to basically a stay-at-home order lockdown. So unfortunately, I haven't really left the house or got much fresh air in the past month and a bit, which I'm not going to lie, is a bit of a kicker when you think about how long we spent back in the UK, but it is what it is. At the very least, we have hope that maybe one day we'll get out of it. But with cases rising, it does not seem like that will be for the foreseeable future. I will keep you updated on that, as I'm sure when I head out, the podcast may be a little bit more exciting, as in I can say I've gone and seen a movie or something like that. But for now, like I told you, the most exciting thing is going to the kitchen at 4 a.m. or going in the backyard. So this, as I mentioned, is a podcast from the past. It's not an entire rip of it, so I'm not just going to throw my 17-year-old voice on it. I'm going to re-record it based on all my notes. For people that are unaware, I have flown on the Boeing 747. It was a special flight. It was not necessarily your Melbourne to Los Angeles or a typical 747 flight. It was a special event on board the Qantas 747. I flew it during the 2019 Avalon Air Show. If you have not heard of the Avalon Air Show, you may get it mistaken by the Australian International Air Show. It just goes under the Avalon Air Show name, as that is where it is held, in Avalon. What am I saying? It's run on every second year and on the odd year. So we've got 2021, but that has not happened this year. You'll have like the 2023, 2025. I'm not sure if that's changing given the fact COVID's cancelled it for this year. I think the next one may be 2023, but don't quote me too much on that. I also just want to apologize in advance if this podcast feels a little bit disjointed. It's probably not going to be one of my best, simply because I'm trying to remember basically what happened over 2 years ago. And I'm not going to lie, I don't remember a whole lot. So I'm very much heavily relying off my notes. And when there's a sea of writing, it can get a tiny bit confusing, as you can probably imagine. One of my goals for being an aviation enthusiast was to fly the Boeing 747 before it was retired. I should mention that the 2019 Avalon Air Show was conducted before the pandemic. So my goal still stood if I wanted to fly it before they retired. But at that point in time, I had no idea that in exactly a year's time, you know, the pandemic would be hitting and we would be seeing mass groundings and mass retirements in an instant, robbing many, many people of the opportunity to fly the type, whether that be with British Airways, KLM, obviously Qantas, and a host of other airlines. But yeah, my goal was to always fly with the 747, and I did see this exclusive flight, which was actually only available for 150 people. It started at $747, which is typically what you would expect if it's a special flight on the 747. I think $747 is pretty fitting, to say the least. It was from Sydney to the Avalon Air Show and back, and was a drought relief flight, basically a charity fundraising event. The overall goal from the event was to help farmers in need who had experienced incredible amounts of drought, lack of rain and water, and obviously their crops were hurting massively, so we were looking through this flight to be able to raise money to help them. $137,000 was raised during the flight, which made it, at the time, a record for the charity flights that Qantas held over the years, as my particular flight was not the first time that Qantas had done such a thing. In the past, they had held multiple other charity flights. There was one that went up to Longreach for the Qantas Museum and so forth, so it is a common thing that they previously did. Of course, the pandemic has kind of stopped that from happening, but it would not shock me if they hold more of these. They're a success. People love getting on board them, mostly aviation enthusiasts, as while it's of course centered around charity, one of the main things they offer to the public is an exclusive opportunity to get on board an aircraft that is being retired or under special circumstances. So as an example, we're flying into the Avalon Air Show, we conducted a low pass and everything like that. So it's one of those memories that you will never forget. Included in the $747 was food, beverages, access to the Qantas domestic lounge, business domestic lounge at Sydney Airport, and of course, I think I already mentioned this, but if I didn't, the ticket to the Avalon Air Show for the entire day, which I believe was Saturday. Don't quote me there, I may have gotten my days mixed up, but I'm pretty sure it was Saturday. The air show runs on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. There are trade days which occur beforehand. I've been to one of the trade days when I was invited by Lockheed Martin to one of their press conferences, pardon me. God, I'm so used to when I record videos on my channels, I'm like, oh, the press release. It was a press conference, pardon me. They were talking about the F-35, but yeah, so it was a press conference that I got invited to, and still to this day, it's actually the only thing I've ever been invited to. Fun fact, the only time any aircraft manufacturer or engine manufacturer or whatever it may be has ever invited me anywhere was to this Lockheed Martin press conference, which was very, very exciting. I got my own little badge that I still have to this day, and it's like Avalon Air Show Trade Day DJ's Aviation, and I still got that in my drawer, probably sitting behind me. So, so cool to have that. I wore that definitely with pride. And one of the brilliant things is there are still movements at the Avalon Air Show during the trade days. but it's empty. You know, it's for trade. So one of the best things is going to the spotting areas, and instead of it being absolutely jam-packed, it's empty. You may only have five people in a huge, huge space spanning, say, a kilometer. So it's great for getting pictures, great for getting videos, and it was something that I definitely did. However, we're getting way too ahead of ourselves by jumping into the actual Avalon Air Show itself. We still have not even left Melbourne. We haven't boarded the 747. We haven't spent the night in Sydney. There's a lot more to discuss. But I am, at the end of the day, very happy that I managed to get on board a 747. It's one of those things of, I think at the time I was very hesitant to do, but I'm happy I did, because look how the world has turned out. You know, 747s are a rarity. There are none flying with passengers in Australia now, and Qantas have retired theirs, British Airways have retired theirs. So I'm happy I did it, and I think it's one of those things that it's given me that, not wake-up call, but it's certainly made me now reconsider certain other life decisions where I may have been like, oh, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, but, you know, oh, I might not do it. You always will wonder, what if I'd done that? So if you're in a position where it's possible, I would highly recommend doing so. I'm going off on a tangent here, but as an example, I had the opportunity to go to the 2021 Champions League final, which my football team participated in. Now, this was with 5 days' notice. 5 days' notice, the game was in Portugal, and if you've listened to the podcast, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you have not, it was back in June, I believe, so you can go and listen to that and hear my entire experience. But, you know, 5 days' notice, and I was like, I'm doing it. So I went with my friend, and my team ended up winning, and that is one of the best days of my entire life. But it was that thing of, I'm like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime, I've got to do it. And I did it. I'm very, very happy I did. But I think it's the same thing with this 747. I would have been kicking myself in the foot for the rest of my life had I not taken this opportunity. So I flew up to, I believe it was Sydney Airport from Melbourne the night before. We needed to be in Sydney Airport around about 6:15. That was the Qantas domestic business lounge, as they were holding auctions. There was going to be breakfast, and basically they wanted everyone to congregate in the one location, as you could probably expect. But one of the main problems is they wanted us to arrive at 6:15. You may think to yourself, well, that's fine, you know, just get a flight at 3 a.m. out of Melbourne. Well, there's a curfew in Sydney, and at this point in time, if I wanted to get in at 6:15, it would not have been possible. There was no flight into Sydney Airport from Melbourne anywhere that would get me in before, I think it was 8:30, which is a huge problem. I would be missing my flight, basically, on the 747. So it was definitely kicking anyone that was coming from a different state in the foot, because they all had to arrive the night before and spend $150, $200 on a hotel that was right nearby. I got into Sydney Airport at 11:30 or 11 p.m. I had about 3 hours sleep in a hotel, and then I had to check back out and walk another kilometer back to the airport, which, might I add, was very, very confusing maneuvering around Sydney Airport. At the time, I was only 18, but it was not my first solo journey. In fact, 2 weeks prior, I was in London for a holiday as a solo trip. It feels so weird to say, oh, I went somewhere. Because now, obviously, we have COVID, and it's kind of like, you don't say, oh, I went on holiday for 2 weeks. I had a brilliant time 12 hours away at the beach. No. The holidays nowadays are to the local supermarket. So it is quite weird for me saying, oh, I went here and I went there. But it's all about reminiscing about maybe the times that were a little bit better. Like I was saying, everyone that was coming from different states was definitely shot in the foot. But I personally found it easier to maneuver around London than Sydney Airport, and I think that says a lot. The map made no sense. I had to walk through car parks. It was pitch black. The reading on my phone, I had the maps on my phone, and they weren't accurate, and they weren't reading my location properly, and it was just utterly, utterly ridiculous. But I found the hotel. I do remember finding the hotel. It was in some, like, nook and cranny, and I was like, of course. Quite expensive as well to stay that night, but you got to do what you got to do to fly on a 747. Am I right? I'm sure everyone listening to this that is an aviation enthusiast will have at some point spent a lot of money on something that maybe they shouldn't have done so, but it was in the mean for their passion. You know, it was for that passion overall, whether it be purchasing a model aircraft, maybe doing something regarding a special flight. I don't know, maybe training themselves to get their private pilot license, and that maybe wasn't the best decision financially, but they wanted to do it, and do you know what I mean? So let me just go through my notes and what else I've put here. Before boarding in Melbourne, I was actually told I didn't have a window seat, which is a huge problem because I have recorded a trip report. If you want to, after this podcast, see the 747 experience visually with audio that's a bit more short and concise, I do have a trip report on the channel, which is another thing a lot of people don't know. I do have trip reports on the channel. I don't fly a lot, but I do have a few trip reports if you would like to go and have a look. It's a great experience. It details a lot of what's going on, and I think having listened to this, you'll be able to go and watch that and be like, oh, that's when that happened, or that's when the low pass happened, or this is when he was saying they were going over Canberra, for instance. So I definitely recommend doing so. I may leave it in the show notes, but honestly, you could just type into YouTube, Qantas 747 Trip Report DJ's Aviation. I'm sure it would come up. What else? Yeah, so before boarding, I was told I didn't have a window seat, despite at the time of the flight booking saying I wanted a window seat. This was a bit of a concern for me because I was going to be making that very trip report. And if I was in a middle aisle seat, it would be very, very difficult because I wouldn't be able to record the takeoff. I wouldn't be able to record the landing. So during the period of time I was in the Qantas domestic business lounge, I was finding the director of the entire trip trying to get myself basically a window seat. It took a long time. I think I spent something like 45 minutes potentially. Also, just let me plug in my laptop. We wouldn't want it dying on us halfway through the podcast, would we? Not at all. But I spent like 45 minutes looking for the director who I managed to speak to. I basically stated my intent. I was saying something along the lines of, hey, you know, I'm looking at recording a trip report. However, I've been put on an aisle seat. Is there any way I could be moved to a window seat to be able to, you know, film this and document the experience? To their credit, they were great. I think it took another 30 minutes for them to sort something out. And then I was finally given a window seat, much to the pleasure of me, because that was something I wanted. Upon boarding, the experience was, you know, decent. But right before that, I should mention there were a lot of auctions taking place in that same lounge. Auctions for memorabilia of the 747. Now, that's including tray tables. What else? God, I'm trying to remember what was actually auctioned off. I guess you could just generalize it and say Qantas 747 parts and bits. Very, very expensive. I would have loved to have gotten something, but that tray table, I think, went for something like 800 Australian, which is about £450. So I'm not going to lie, after spending $747 on the flight itself, and then a further, I think, $200 on the hotel, an $800 tray table, no matter how much I love the 747, was probably a little bit out of my price range. But kudos to whoever got it. And of course, the money was going to the charity, which is a great cause, to say the least. There were more auctions. I had a nice breakfast. I wanted to compare lounges. So I've only ever been in two lounges. That's the Qantas International Lounge the Business Lounge at Melbourne, and then the Qantas Domestic Business Lounge. Both of those weren't really because maybe I deserved it or should have been there. One, of course, was the event. And then the first time, pardon me, was in Melbourne. And that was only because Qantas upgraded me for free, basically, because I had a flight cancellation. And then my new flight was 5 minutes later than the original one. And they were like, sorry, here you go. We'll put you in business class for the whole way to London, and we'll also put you in the lounge. Up until that point, I'd never experienced a lounge because I don't fly business class. I'm always flying economy. So that was pretty cool, but I definitely have to say that the Sydney lounge was a lot better than the Melbourne one, purely as an aviation enthusiast. There was actually windows in the Sydney one, and I was able to see the aircraft pushing back and taxiing. Whereas Melbourne, if anyone's been to the lounge T2 for Qantas, the business one at least, you basically go down escalators and you're underneath the airport. There's no windows. While I don't deal with anything like claustrophobia, you could definitely feel claustrophobic in there. There's no windows. It's very compact. And ultimately, because I have a peanut allergy, I couldn't eat any of the food. I could only eat cheese and crackers in the lounge. So maybe, to be completely honest, I didn't get the full experience that some other people would get. Personally, hands down, I'd much rather just sit at the gate and watch the planes take off and land. But that's just me. There's definitely a demographic that may prefer going in, say, the business lounge to do work or something. But as someone who's just going for leisure reasons, I feel like I didn't really enjoy it too much. But it was an experience, and I'm very grateful for that, even though I didn't pay for it. So that's even more of a bonus. Let's go through my notes. The flight up from Melbourne to Sydney was very bumpy. We flew on a Qantas 737. Storms were very much present during the entirety of the flight, so obviously that definitely hampered overall the experience. But that's something I've always noted, is my 737 flights are never smooth. I've flown on Virgin Australia 737 and the Qantas one. Well, actually, it may have been Virgin Blue when I flew it. God, that brings back a lot of memories. To anyone from Australia or the Oceania region that knows Virgin Blue, that's a throwback and a half right there, and that was very much my childhood. So I may have flown Virgin Blue, or maybe Virgin Australia, by the time they changed their name. I wouldn't know, but anyway, I've flown one of their 737s and the Qantas 737, and both were very bumpy from my experience, and not entirely smooth. I definitely think I prefer flying the A320, but that's just, you know, personal preference. I'm sure there's some people that may prefer flying the 737 over the 320. But I would love to fly another type of 737 and see what that experience is like. It's been a while since I've flown. Actually, no. I flew TUI. What am I saying? I literally just flew on a TUI 737 4 months ago, and I've completely forgotten that. Not 4 months ago. How long? Three? Four? Yeah. Something like that. I completely forgot. Okay, I lie. It was Virgin Australia, potentially Qantas, and TUI. The TUI flight was good. It was Virgin Australia and Qantas that were not great. There we go. So, a stormy flight, like I mentioned, got me into Sydney quite late. Boarding, I got priority boarding because of my peanut allergy, and it's such a cool experience to be able to walk on the jet bridge and approach the 747. I think for people that have done it, you'll know. Unfortunately, people that haven't, it's just that experience you can't really describe. It's for an aviation enthusiast. My mum's favorite plane is the 747. My mum and my dad helped me get into aviation, but my mum is an absolute lunatic for planes. She loves them, and her favorite aircraft is the 747. So it's something that I also hold very close to my heart, and to be able to walk up to that. Unfortunately, she's never had the opportunity to fly one. I wanted to fly on a British Airways 747 with her, but as you know, with the pandemic, it's been retired, and it's something she's not been able to do, and I don't think she'll be able to do it ever. So for me to be able to get on one was very much like, I like this. I'm very grateful for it. It's great experience. Like I said, priority boarding. I managed to get a window seat. Exit row, so decent. What I did find out later on is I'd been put in an aisle seat originally, right at the back of the plane. Turns out four of the front rows in economy were basically empty, meaning I think in total there may have been something like eight window seats available that people that had requested a window seat weren't put in. So I considered myself lucky that I went to go and say something, but had I not said anything, stuck in the aisle seat and then seen so many window seats, I think I may have been a little bit like, This is not great. How come I wasn't given that seat? Especially when they moved me so easily at the end of it. So I was kind of, oh well. The 747, one thing I'll note with Qantas 747s are they're incredibly dated. Lots of scratches, lots of marks. But hey, for an experienced flight, it was great. And I think it really spoke volumes to me about what the 747's been through as an aircraft. You know, one of the oldest planes, one of the most iconic. It's one of those planes that even if you're not an aviation enthusiast, you'll see the 747 or you will have heard of the 747. Maybe not so much the 757 or, you know, God forbid the A330, but if someone mentions the 747, there's a high chance that the person you're talking to will know what you're saying. So being able to sit there, it was like I'm sitting in so much history. And I will argue, I've never felt that with any other flight. Most flights I get on, I'm like, oh, 10 hours in this or like, 15 hours in this, can't wait. How on earth am I going to keep myself occupied? But when I sat in the 747, it was kind of like, wow. Like thinking about the amount of journeys and trips this has been on and reflecting on the aircraft series as a whole, which some people will think is sad, but personally, I just sat there and was like, I can't believe I'm actually on this, experiencing this. Flight down to the Avalon Air Show was incredibly smooth and really, really enjoyable. The cabin crew were cabin crew, but they were all a volunteer, so they were voluntarily doing this experience, not being paid, and they were either on, say, long service leave or on holiday, and they then decided to come down and do this. And one of the main things I noticed from the entire experience is they were all aviation enthusiasts, meaning they were all on the aircraft because, first of all, they loved the 747, but second of all, they loved the Avalon Air Show, and they wanted to go and see all the military aircraft and the flyovers and displays, and that definitely made the flight very, very enjoyable. One of the things I do remember from the overall experience was during the safety announcement where they, you know, show you how to put your life vest on inflator, you got the whistle and all that. They were basically joking with us and saying, you know, we know that we could pick someone out of the crowd and the people in here to come and do this for us because we all know you love planes so much, but we've got to do it for safety reasons. And it was just little jokes like that that were a very nice touch and definitely brought the experience all together. And the best way I could compare it is it very much felt like a field trip in school, but not a field trip. So an excursion, depending on where you are. They didn't feel like our teachers, but it all felt like a big group going together somewhere, and it was really nice. I couldn't speak highly enough of the overall experience. Moving along, let's see what else I've got here. Oh, in the hotel, I was actually staying in a plane spotting designated room, so it was like the aviation room. I had a view of Sydney Airport, but because it was the middle of the night, I didn't see any planes, but it had, I remember it had pictures of planes in and around the room. So, I mean, that's cool. That's something a little noteworthy if you are interested in that part of it. Let's see. Oh, I've just got a little note here that basically this flight was almost a farewell that not everyone really knew about. It was always going to be the final 747 flight into the Avalon Air Show, something I'd never experienced, but it had visited before. It was always going to be the last one, but I think to a certain extent, it also became a farewell that maybe we didn't know was even going to happen. We always knew the Qantas 747 would be retired, and we always had that date. But with the pandemic coming in early 2020, I think, and obviously no one really having the chance to get on board to say goodbye to it properly, I think it was one of those flights that, looking back now, I'm very, very lucky that I took that opportunity. While it wasn't labeled and marketed as a farewell joy flight, it definitely quickly became that. Let's see what else I've got. A flight like this, I know a lot of people will say, how would you compare it to Qantas long haul, or how would you compare it to other short flight? I don't think you can compare flying on the 747 as a joyride to anything else. It's one of those flights that, honestly, I wouldn't call a flight, I'd call an experience, and it's one that I'm not going to compare to, say, the A380. I can't do that. You know, personally, I loved flying on the Qantas A380, but that was just a regular routine flight through to London. The 747, domestically, for a couple of hours, an experience that, you can't say it was better or it was anything like that. It's just in its own league, if you will. So that's, I want to address that part there. Let me go through what else I said. I've already talked about how the interior of the 747 was so dated. One thing we did get to do upon takeoff was walk around the cabin, so I got to see business and premium economy, even the stairs leading up to the second deck. And obviously a double-decker plane we have on the 747, the cockpit is on the top level at the front, which meant I managed to go to the front of the aircraft, and one of the coolest things I've ever had happen on a plane was getting to see it move curve inwards because of the nose of the aircraft. And all of a sudden, you go from a wide fuselage to then the nose of the aircraft curving, you know, in to pitch at the front part. And I was like, oh, this is really, really awesome. So that was quite cool as well. And obviously not having the cockpit door as it usually is, you know, when you fly on a single-deck aircraft, that was also a really awesome experience for me as well. A rockstar welcome we also had when we arrived into the Avalon Air Show with a low pass, but I will honestly admit that the low pass was not that amazing. Being on the aircraft, it definitely looked cool from videos, but personally for me, because of the angles, I couldn't even see the ground. So it was kind of just felt like we were taking off, and I don't know, but it's at least cool to say I've been in a low pass of an aircraft, but as the principle of it from being inside, it wasn't the most amazing thing. I personally found the banking over the water and sea a lot more enjoyable. We flew over Canberra, and being able to just, I just want to quickly go back to being able to walk through the cabin. It did indeed mean that being able to take pictures and videos of the engine and wings were a lot easier than on a regular passenger flight. So I've managed to get lots of incredible pictures of the 747's engines and so forth that I will cherish forever. Great wingtip views, and it was a beautiful day. Beautiful day, not a cloud in the sky. And I say beautiful day because it was beautiful in the air. Down at Avalon, it was 42 degrees Celsius for the entire day, not a cloud in the sky. So it's safe to say that it was very, very hot. And that's always been one of the downsides to the Avalon Air Show. It is so hot. And it's really, really hard to be in that heat for the entire day, taking pictures with your heavy equipment. You know, you've got to have so much water on hand. They do have tents where you can get some fresh air from fans, but I will admit that it doesn't make a huge difference because it's one of those things. If you go inside and cool off, but then you come out and it's 100% worse. So I got burnt, tanned, and that was one of the downsides. But hey, it's one of those experiences. You've got to do it. And what's one of the funny things about the entire thing is that every single Avalon air show, the entire week will be 40 degrees. And I can guarantee you that on the Monday, it will be 18 degrees with rain. It just always happens. The Saturday, Sunday are like 45, 43. And then the day right after, the temperature drops with a cool change. And I'm like, so typical that the days of the air show are so, so hot. But hey, it's Australia, so what can you really expect? One of the downsides about the Avalon Air Show is the location. Obviously, it's nowhere near Melbourne Airport. It's also nowhere near Melbourne. It's basically on the wrong side. And the airport is not big, so obviously we got transported to... Well, pardon me, we landed at the air show, and then as we walked off the aircraft by the stairs, we were able to walk around the 747, and we were immediately at the air show. But for departure, we were back at the original airport area where there's obviously the processing and gates and all that jazz. We had to get these little buses to the Avalon Airport Terminal, which, might I add, is just literally a shed. Just think of it as a big industrial shed where maybe they do metal work. That's basically what it looks like. And it was so busy, people trying to get on buses that were transporting you to Melbourne Airport, to the CBD, and because of the terrible transport links to the air show, that there weren't enough buses to cope with the demand. So I remember we waited like 2.5 hours in the soaring heat, just sat there and standing there waiting for our bus to take us to the air show when our bus was delayed, not to the air show, pardon me, to the 747 to head back to Sydney. Because might I add, even though I was in Melbourne, I went to Sydney and then came back to Melbourne. Sorry, no, I was in Melbourne, then went to Sydney, then came back to Melbourne for the air show, then went back to Sydney, then came back to Melbourne. It's dumb, I know, but I wanted to fly on a 747. So it was kind of like, oh, but my home is like however many hours away. Can I just go back there? But no, I wanted to do the 747 flight back. So it is my own fault for having to wait that long, but I just thought I would add that. That's basically it. Overall, it was a very, very enjoyable experience. I couldn't recommend it enough, but unfortunately, the 747s are retired. But I should say that as a charity relief flight, I couldn't recommend it enough. As an experience overall, I'm sure this will be... That experience is not going to be the last. After the pandemic, Qantas will most likely hold more charity flights. While it will not be with the 747, you never know what aircraft type it will be with. You never know what experience it may be. I know they've used the 787 on their Antarctica flights, which are brilliant. Not something I really want to do because it's very, very expensive. But obviously, there's going to be more experiences in the future. And if you're in Australia listening to this, or maybe you're traveling through Australia at the time that one of these happens, first of all, consider yourself very, very lucky. But otherwise, just try and get on it because it is worth it. It's a great day out and it's something that you'll definitely remember forever. That's going to conclude this podcast. Like I said, this was it's almost a re-recording of one that was published 3 years ago. So it may have bits that were left out, but basically I listened to the old podcast, which is no longer on any streaming platforms, and I wrote a bunch of notes down. So I've tried to cover everything. I apologize if it felt a little bit disjointed. I've done my absolute best with everything I've written down and trying to track back 3 years, which is not that easy. I hate to break it to you, especially when I've had so many experiences in the UK for the past 2 years. Trying to remember what actually happened, you know, it'd be easy to forget that I even went on a 747, but we're here, we've done it. I hope you've enjoyed it. Until more exciting things happen in my life, I may look at trying to cover some of the older podcasts again. So as an example, my experience on board a 787, my experience in business class, plane spotting at Los Angeles, the journey to Los Angeles, my experience on a Virgin Australia 777, do you know what I mean? So hopefully I'll be able to do more of those for you just to kind of keep the podcasts coming, as every week it is a bit hard to find something to talk about unless something big happens in the aviation world. As always, thanks very much for listening. If you want to review the podcast, you're more than welcome to. Like I said, I will read out your review if it's a written one. That's on Apple Podcasts. Otherwise, if you're on Spotify or whatever, feel free to drop a follow. If you are not on the Discord server, I'd highly recommend doing so. That is where these shows are basically live streamed, meaning you can listen in live. And on the off chance that I'm not doing a story-related podcast, I will open up an area where the community can ask questions, similar to last episode. So you'll be able to have your questions answered in here, which is maybe a cool thing if you've had a burning question you want answered. Until the next one, take care. My throat is absolutely burning, so I'm going to scalp some water after this. And I will see you either in the Discord server, YouTube channel, over on Twitter, or just in the next podcast if that is something you only listen to. Thank you very much once again for listening.